Danielle, welcome to Drive.
Thanks, Matt.
Not a problem. Now, in your article that you've written about the topic, you talk about the idea of intolerance of uncertainty. Can you just explain that concept?
Yeah, intolerance of uncertainty is something that we measure in psychological research, and we look at whether people like surprises or not, okay. whether they feel that they always need to know what's going to happen, and whether really they want to control the future and control everything that's going to happen in their day. And what we've seen is that in different groups of people, if you have a look at people that have difficulties with extreme shyness or who tend to be worrying all the time, people with diagnoses of Asperger's, people with a whole range of psychological problems, they tend to score more highly on that scale of disliking uncertainty than people that don't have those diagnoses.
And so this is from, you've been working in this area doing research, I believe, for high school students as well. So can you tell us a bit about what those kind of results have shown, looking at the links between the intolerance to uncertainty and also these kind of mental illness problems that you've been talking about?
Sure. What we're hoping to do is actually reduce or prevent anxiety and depression through the work that we're doing. We go in and work with teachers to deliver a program. It's actually a very long, comprehensive program. It's 18 lessons, and it targets this one factor, whether you like uncertainty or not, whether you can kind of welcome it and you can accept it and you can roll with it as it comes. That's one factor that we are changing when we go into schools. But we're also targeting things like the expectations that students have of themselves and that their parents and families have of them. We target comparisons and envy and body image, nutrition, sleep, a whole lot of things that have been shown to be really important with adolescents.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it seems that this kind of intolerance or inability to handle uncertainty is a problem. So can you tell us about how, I guess it's a pretty recent phenomenon, that smartphones have really changed or maybe diminished our ability to manage this ourselves?
Yeah, I think it's actually quite obvious to most people when you point it out to them. When I went to school, we didn't have the internet, but we also didn't have smartphones. So if you didn't know the answer to a problem, you couldn't immediately get it.
Mm.
Or if you had a doubt or a worry into your mind, you couldn't immediately text a friend to ask for their advice or get reassurance. And now what I find in the clinic and what we find across schools and just even with adults is the moment people have a worry, they'll often turn straight away to a friend, checking if what they're wearing is right, even to that level, to obviously more serious things. Now, in this article, I'm not talking about the more serious concerns. We're talking about overusing smartphones to deal with every single doubt that enters someone's mind.
Okay, so on the flip side of that, though, I guess you have to distinguish between the gravity of the problem, but wouldn't communicating or talking to people about your problem, isn't that a healthy thing to do rather than kind of bottling it up?
It is. It is. It's a little bit, though, so if it's a serious problem or something that is really rattling you and it's something that's important to you because it's related to one of your goals, then yes, you should, in fact, talk to someone who knows you quite well and can help you get it into a bit of perspective. But that is quite different to, say, for example, there's someone that's written at the bottom of that article that they've started a new job and they're getting a lot of anxiety before they go to work every day. And they've written that they are texting their friends for reassurance before they walk in to work. And they've said that they've noticed their anxiety getting worse. And the reason for that is because their friends actually can't tell them that their work is going well. Their friends aren't in the workplace. Their friends don't have that information. And I think the problem is when the person on the other end of the phone gets drawn into giving reassurance, instead of just saying, well, let's see what's going to happen. So for that man in particular who's worried about work, he's got to wait and see what's going to happen as to whether he goes well in his work or whether he doesn't. He's got to keep putting effort in and he's got to keep turning up. But asking for reassurance from his friends every day is not going to give him the confidence. It means that he's leaning on those people instead of leaning on himself and learning that he can go in, that he can cope with the uncertainty of the moment and of not having that positive feedback. And just wait till it's going to take maybe 2 months in his case, and then he'll get some feedback and he'll know whether he's doing well or not. In the meantime, he's got to sit with the anxiety and just keep at it.
So overcoming the problem of, like, I guess it's the urgency or the immediacy of requiring that feedback, which smartphones totally give us.
That's right. And it's wanting to know the answer.
Mm.
And I think that's what smartphones and the internet has sort of inadvertently fed for us, this idea that there is an answer that we can get quickly, whereas actually real life means we've often got to wait.
Is this problem more pronounced for children?
I don't think we know about that. We actually see, there's another interesting fact that we've seen, and that is that comorbidity, or the number of diagnoses that a person has of psychological problems that go together, is actually related to the score they get on that intolerance of uncertainty scale. So if you score highly on that scale, you're more likely to have both depression and an eating disorder, or an anxiety and a depression and eating disorder, than if you just have one problem, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So we think, and we've just, in research that we've done at Macquarie, we've just confirmed that that's the case for adolescents. We've got a sample of 170 children and adolescents, but there was a study originally done in Sydney at CRUFAT, actually, that was the first to see that in adults.
It's interesting, you know, reading your article reminded me of something that I saw. So I really love Louis C.K., the comedian, and it reminded me of an interview he did on Conan. And he said that he told the story that he was kind of driving and he was feeling sad and he heard a Bruce Springsteen song and he pulled over and he just kind of cried. And he was saying that, you know, that was how he was feeling in that moment. He embraced it. And the quote that he said is that sadness is poetic and we're really lucky to live sad moments. So this was part of, I guess, an overarching rant about how people, as soon as they feel something unpleasant, we try to block it out and we try to avoid it quickly by just looking on our phone. That was kind of related to sadness. But does that sentiment link with your, I guess, the central thesis of your article?
Well, I think the important psychological movement is the movement that we need to just accept feelings and understand that they're related to things. So sadness might be related to being disappointed or to a loss, and we just have to let ourselves have it.
Hmm.
Now, the article I've written is not saying that we shouldn't communicate with others. We should. We're social. It's important for us to have close connections with people that we can count on. I suppose where I'd come back to is, as we're saying, what's important is that it's just okay to have feelings and to sit with them. And when it comes to anxiety, which is more what my article is talking about, with anxiety, we actually have to endure the anxiety. If we can endure it and teach ourselves to wait, then we usually find that what we're scared of doesn't happen, or if it does, we can survive it. And therefore, our anxiety goes down and it starts to go away. Whereas if we don't do that, that's when anxiety starts to escalate and become a problem.
It's okay to have feelings.
That's right. Well, anxiety is a normal part of life.
It's a thing that we all experience, I guess, part of the concept of being a human.
That's right.
Danielle, thank you so much for coming on to Drive and telling us all about it today.